This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. A preliminary report reveals details about the fatal crash of a Ute commuter service plane on February 6th that killed all five on board. The report showed two factors that could have played a cause in the accident: weather and pilot inexperience. KYUK's Greg Kim has more.
On February 6th, a plane left Bethel towards Kipnuk around 10:40 a.m. A half hour later, the plane had crashed and all five on board were dead. Pilot Tony Matthews, age 34, and Kipnuk residents Quentin Muggy Peter, age 18, Quentin's mother Carrie Gurley Peter, age 45, Charlie Carl, age 66, and Donna Misak, age 42. The National Transportation Safety Board's preliminary report on the accident says that pilot Tony Matthews began training with the airline January 7th of this year, a month before the crash. He had a total flight time of 611 hours, with 500 hours being the minimum requirement for a commercial pilot. The report also says Matthews only logged 30 hours in the airplane make and model that he was flying when it crashed. But Ute General Manager Nathan McCabe says that's only technically true.
Within his 500 hours, he also flew not our plane, but a similar plane.
McCabe did say that the flight that crashed midway from Bethel to Kipnuk was only Matthews' fourth flight with Ute aside from training. The plane took off while clouds were hovering at about 600 feet. According to the report, a pilot for another company who took off just after Matthews said he had to receive special visual flight rules clearance with that cloud ceiling. An hour after the accident, both Bethel and Kipnuk airports reported that clouds had dropped to 400 feet, with visibility also reduced to a half mile in snow, mist, and freezing fog. When the Ute agent in Kipnuk reported the plane was overdue, the airline dispatched two planes to go search for the missing group. One of the crews spotted the wreckage about halfway between Bethel and Kipnuk. The report states that the remnants of the plane were strewn across almost 400 feet of frozen tundra. Since that crash, McCabe says Ute has added new self-imposed restrictions on both pilot experience and weather conditions to take off.
With any new pilot, they will do more than 20 hours IOE, so they're going to have an instructor with them for more than 20 hours now, okay? And they're only going to fly 40 nautical miles from Bethel.
McCabe doesn't yet know how long a new pilot will be restricted within 40 miles of Bethel. He says they are still working out all the details of their new safety requirements. Another one of those changes is a heightened wariness of the weather. McCabe says Ute has increased the cloud ceiling requirement from 500 to 600 feet.
At the moment, we are doing everything we can to put things in place so it's much safer.
The NTSB's full report with probable cause of the February 6th crash of a Ute commuter service plane has yet to be released. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
And in more aviation news, federal transportation investigators say air crashes are too common in Alaska. The National Transportation Safety Board recently highlighted the fact that Alaska's accident rate is more than twice the national average. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, the NTSB is now calling on federal regulators to work with industry to make flying safer.
For many, flying in Alaska is not a big deal.
It's more of a necessity as opposed to a pastime for the most part.
That's Clint Johnson. He's the NTSB's chief in Alaska. He says the state's reliance on air travel sets it apart from the contiguous states.
We use airplanes like other communities in the lower 48 use trucks and buses and what have you.
But planes do go down. Just this past summer, four planes crashed in the Ketchikan area alone. In the Aleutians, Unalaska has seen two accidents since October. Just this month, a commuter plane went down in the YK Delta, killing five. Scott Harris used to operate the commuter airline Harris Air in Sitka. He says there are a number of factors that make flying in Alaska different. For example, down south, even if you're out in the middle of nowhere, you're probably not that far from a landing strip. But here in Alaska,
you have to make the airport your going for. There isn't an alternate for you, or there's very few choices, let's put it that way. In the floatplane world, it's even less.
And, of course,
The terrain is a tremendous factor. The weather is even a bigger factor in all of that.
Harris says it's not just that the weather can be severe or unpredictable. Often it's simply unknown. Though the Federal Aviation Administration has more than 200 weather cameras throughout Alaska, forecasts can be hard to come by. And if clouds roll in unexpectedly, a pilot might end up in a situation they're not trained or certified to get out of.
The question then comes with the pilot, do I continue and break that rule and say it was okay, or do we turn around at some point and go back?
At a September roundtable with charter flight operators around the state, the NTSB heard from people like Harris. They told safety officials that things like better weather reporting and pilot training could make flying safer. But the chairman of the NTSB said in a statement that the FAA's, quote, silo-like, unquote, nature makes it difficult for the agency to address the myriad challenges of safely flying in Alaska. So the NTSB is calling on the federal regulator to work with industry partners to help the agency focus on solving Alaska-specific issues. Here's Clint Johnson again.
We recommended that they come up with a stakeholder group or a champion, a person or a group to look at various items or challenges that we have in Alaska that a lot of the rest of the lower 48 doesn't have.
In a statement read here by the FAA's regional spokesman, Alan Kennitzer, the agency offers support for that idea.
The FAA has a long history of promoting safety initiatives in Alaska, and we strongly support bringing together various stakeholders to identify safety risk areas and potential solutions.
In other words, the agency says it'll review the NTSB's recommendation. The board is scheduled to have another panel discussion with charter flight operators from around the country in March. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
And finally, Bethel's second marijuana store, Cusco Kush, opened up yesterday. Several customers were in the store around 2 p.m., choosing from about a dozen strands of marijuana available. KYUK's Greg Kim made a visit.
Cusco Kush almost didn't happen. Last year, store owners Naeem Shabani and Jared Carr signed a lease agreement with the city of Bethel, but that was before the city council knew it was going to be a marijuana store. A dispute between the two sides lasted for months. The city threatened to void the lease. Cusco Kush's owners threatened to sue the city. Eventually, the city sold the land to the store. Jared Carr is just glad it's all over.
The journey was long. And there were, you know, lots of roadblocks with different government agencies. But now that we're here, we're excited to be open.
A week before Cusco Kush's opening, Bethel's first marijuana store, Alaska Buds, experienced a break-in and burglary. Carr says that doesn't worry him.
When we designed the building, we designed it specifically first around security. That's why there's no windows. We have metal doors, metal door frames, and many other security features to the building.
Carr's store is brand new, from the building itself to everything inside, and he's clearly proud.
We wanted to put together a store that not only we were proud of, but that the city of Bethel was proud of as well. We wanted to make it a nice store, period. Not nice for Bethel, not nice for Alaska, but a nice store.
Bethel residents and visitors now have two options across the street from each other where they can legally buy marijuana. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for News Yukden coming up.